This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Harvey Weinstein, Larry Nassar, Rob Porter, Matt Lauer. These are just a few of the big names exposed by the Me Too and Time's Up movements in recent months. Although these movements have gone viral in less than a year, the underlying issues are longstanding. That's why Women Helping Women has been working in Southwest Ohio since 1973. But not just women are impacted by sexual abuse and rape. An area of growing awareness is the way that men, especially young men, are also victimized. Today, we are joined by three people who are working to help victims, after the fact, deal with the trauma they have experienced and with the police to prevent situations from escalating into even greater violence and with various groups to prevent this sort of activity altogether. I am joined by the Vice President of Programming for Women Helping Women, Kendra Massey, by the Director of the Butler County and Rural Services Area for Women Helping Women, Casey Frazee-Katz, and by the founder and president of A Voice for the Innocent, Jamie Syvrus. If you would like to join the conversation, call 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We are also on Facebook and Twitter. Everybody, welcome to Cincinnati Edition. It's really good to have you here. And Kendra, let's just start off with, and this could go to any of you sitting here right now, but how's the attention of the Me Too and the Time's Up movements, how's that impacted your work here in Cincinnati?
So we have seen at varying times during the Me Too movement increase in calls from survivors. In the last year, we noticed spikes in some of our sexual assault services or utilization of sexual assault services, mainly after sort of key media issues came out. We saw an increase in our attendance at our sexual assault support group, but also just looking at our year-end numbers in 2017, our sexual assault services had increased.
Significantly,
and I can't think offhand.
That's all right.
Yeah.
But more than just a statistical bump.
Yeah, noticeably and significantly.
So this is having some sort of impact, giving people the courage to come forward and say, this happened to me too.
Yes. Okay. And I'll say that one other thing we've noticed is people reaching out, wanting to just get involved with the agency, so whether volunteering or connecting with the mission in some way. And I would guess some of those folks are connected in a personal way as well.
Okay. Casey, there's an ocean of data out there on the issues surrounding this. But when you're talking to somebody, what is it that you present that helps people understand that this is really a significant issue in our community?
I think one of the things that can be really helpful is that people know that they're not alone in it. And I think with what you're saying with the Me Too movement, that's something that we're seeing as well, is that people now recognize that it's, or are recognizing that it is something that's okay to talk about, to seek services for, or for professionals we work with in the community, that this is something that matters for professionals to get trained about, because survivors of sexual violence are everywhere in our communities.
And is there a particular data point that for you particularly strikes home about how big a problem this is?
I think there are a couple that come to mind. When we have a partnership in Butler County, we work with Miami University, and I think it's powerful that 1 in 5 will be a survivor of sexual violence during their time in college, and that just feels like too many people. One is too many, but 1 in 5 seems so high.
20%? That seems very high.
Yeah,
very high. Jamie, tell me a little bit. When did A Voice for the Innocent get founded first? How old is this? This is primarily an online space. Is that right?
Correct, yeah. And we launched in October of 2012.
Okay, so you've been around. You're not a product of Me Too.
We're not, no.
Have you noticed people being more willing to come forward and tell their stories on your site?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there was kind of a a week where the, you know, the Me Too movement was at its biggest on social media. And we probably, you know, we normally see probably around 15 stories a week submitted on our site. And that it jumped up probably to 30, 35 a week around that time. And it, you know, then people, to kind of mirror what Kendra said, the people then coming and joining our volunteer team to respond to these stories and learn how to talk about the issue and learn how to offer support that have been impacted. So I definitely think that it, you know, we saw it on our end as well.
So what's the purpose of the site? What if people haven't had a chance to look at it yet, and they certainly can find it very easily, a voiceforTheInnocent.org, mm-hmm. Voice for the Innocent all run together.
Yeah.
But if they haven't had a chance to look at it, what are you trying to accomplish there?
So, you know, when I was growing up, I had been, you know, sexually abused as a kid. And based on the way my mom responded and got me in counseling and got me help, I just was always able to share my story. And
let's back up on that a little bit. So at what age did this sort of abuse take place or get started?
Probably around sixth grade. So I guess maybe 12, right around 12, 11 or 12. Okay. And it went on all through middle school. So about 3 years. It was by my father, and my parents were separated. So, you know, it just wasn't happening in the house. It was happening on the weekends that I was over there. And when I finally decided I didn't want to go over there anymore, I didn't want to be a part of that anymore, when I told my mom, I honestly expected I would be in trouble because of the materials that I was, you know, being shown and things like that. I thought I would be somehow in trouble. That wasn't any message my mom gave me. That's just something that I had thought.
And you assumed that?
I assumed I would be in trouble. Yeah.
And what was her reaction?
Oh, she was, you know, she told me I didn't have to go over there anymore. She told me that it wasn't my fault. She told me she was proud of me for telling her. She told me that she loved me. She then, with my permission, told other members of our family so that they could also support me and, you know, people from church, people in the community, and really made sure that I walked away knowing it wasn't my fault, knowing that this was something that happened to me, not something that I did, not something that I deserved, and that my worth as a person wasn't affected by that.
Casey, Kendra, as you hear Jamie's story and his mother's response, how would you evaluate both how typical it is for a young boy or a girl who is being abused, assuming it's their problem, and then the parental response here is, in my mind, pretty impressive.
I think it's pretty incredible. There's a lot of great research about the first response that someone gets when they disclose, whether it's positive or negative, could have years-long consequences. And so the fact that he was able to receive a positive, supportive response and saying it's not your fault is so powerful. And unfortunately, that's not how that always goes. I hear this a lot in support groups that we run, is that people are not believed or they're blamed or they're shamed by parents or people who are close to them. So that's incredible that was the response.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would just agree with that. Yeah. It was great to sit here and hear
Here's the other thing. As I went on the site mm-hmm. and looked at a Voice for the Innocent, what struck me is those themes that you just laid out. One, that the victim assumed somehow it was their fault. Mm-hmm. Two, that the response, they assumed the response would be bad. But the response in your mother's case was, it's not your fault. You are the victim. It's the perpetrator's fault. Mm-hmm. Nothing to be ashamed of here. Those are the same sorts of themes that I see when somebody posts on your site that people respond on the site in the very same way.
Yeah. And I didn't realize this when I kind of had the idea and when we were building it, but essentially A Voice for the Innocent is an extension of the community that I was given, you know, and that's what we wanted it to be. We essentially launched just to be a place where people could anonymously share their stories. And they a couple years in, one of our really great volunteers was a student at University of Cincinnati, and they ran a kind of a research project on our site and the stories that were submitted, and they really broke down all these stories into categories of what topics people were talking about. And you know, to further back up what they were saying, you know, the biggest topic was people who had a negative response the first time they tried to tell, you know, and people saying, I don't even know if this would be something to talk about because, you know, nobody seemed to care that this happened to me, or, you know, I tried to tell my mom when I was a kid and they said, quit making stuff up, or, you know, so we don't talk about those things. I mean, and I had never noticed that until it was laid out in this project of, oh, these are the themes people are talking about. And that response from a parent or loved one being negative, you know, was very, very frequent.
Tell me a little bit more about how the site runs. Yes, people come in and post their stories, mm-hmm. and then other people are responding. Are those volunteers? Are those anybody that joins the site? How does that work?
So it is volunteers mainly. And volunteers come and sign up, and they go through a training basically that teaches them.
So they have
them,
some training.
Yeah, before they teaches them how to talk about this issue. Now, if somebody comes and joins our site and shares their story, they also can comment on sites. But our comments are very highly monitored. And, you know, if somebody responds in a way that doesn't feel as supportive or doesn't feel as necessary in the moment, that's not something that we typically put up. We don't have that issue a lot, knock on wood. Most of the time, people that are visiting our site, whether they're volunteers or storytellers, are incredibly empathetic. They're incredibly compassionate, and they just want to believe and validate people.
You know, before we take a break, the one other thing I want to say about Voice of the Innocent that struck me was by reading some of the posts of people who came in and told their story, it's a way of getting lots of concrete variety of how people are victimized. You know, it's one thing to read in the literature about how children are treated or how they sort of end up in these situations, or the span of stories here is pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. And we see people who were hurt as children, hurt in college, you know, people who were assaulted in the military. I mean, it really does. People come from all walks of life.
Trafficking.
Yeah.
We've seen some of that. Organized trafficking is right there. And the conflicts that people are feeling about how to respond to the trauma is all right there. It's something that we want to continue to talk about. So we have to take a break right now, but fortunately, all three of my guests are staying put, and they'll be here right after the break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Women are disproportionately impacted by sexual harassment, abuse, and rape. The significant number of incidents in which men our victims is coming into clearer focus. To talk about this broad field, I am joined today by the Vice President of Programming for Women Helping Women, Kendra Massey, and the Director of the Butler County and Rural Services for Women Helping Women, Casey Frazee-Katz, and the founder and president of A Voice for the Innocent, Cyrus. There you go. And we have a caller who's called in that I want to get online right away. Kristen, are you there?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
I think you have a story that you want to contribute to help sort of move our discussion along.
Yeah, totally. So this is the first time I'm actually telling my story to the public, so bear with me. Okay.
Take your time.
So when I was 13 years old, I had my first boyfriend, and he actually sexually assaulted me and physically abused me. This led me to cutting myself, which would later lead me to being diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and I had attempted suicide. So this also made me have a distrust in men, which would later affect most of my relationships in my adult life. In my early 20s, I had met a soldier, and I thought he was going to change my life for the better. He promised me he was going to make me the perfect military wife, and I thought all my pain was going to be taken away. Well, I was completely wrong. It was nothing like Army Wives, let me tell you, and I watched that show religiously. He actually took me to a hotel room the night before he deployed, and trying to be the perfect fiance, I got into the shower with him, and he wanted me to and I refused, but he forced me to, and my body declined it by puking on him. He did not like this, so he grabbed me out of the shower, and I guess being a courteous gentleman, he laid a towel down on the floor, and he picked me up, and he put me on the floor, and he got on top of me, and he proceeded to force himself inside of me. And I kept pushing away, and I kept saying no, and no, and no, over and over again, thinking, how could he do this to me? He was my fiancé. I was supposed to spend the rest of my life with him. And he kept doing it, and I kept saying no. And finally, I just blacked out and laid there and woke up in bed. And we went on as nothing happened. He went to Iraq, and I went on with my life. It took a month for my friend to get me to talk about it. And when I did, I realized that I was raped. I went and got tested. I took a pregnancy test, and him and I continued to argue because I would not get on Skype when he wanted me to, and he would leave presents at my doorstep the next day. Finally, he came home from R&R, and that was the time my best friend passed away, and the cops showed up at the viewing because he was starting drama, and they told him he wasn't allowed to talk to me again. A few months later, I had ended up getting back together with a guy I dated a few years before. He actually was in the car when my best friend passed away. And he used this to his advantage and manipulating me. He was very narcissistic, and he had a very strong Napoleon complex. He was abusive, and he was very degrading and manipulative. I had been training in mixed martial arts since I was 18, and I had a coach who I loved very much, but he thought it was more than that. He accused me of having sex with him my first fight in Indiana. He also accused me of having sex with the entire team and even took a bus down to Dayton to look at my gym and see if my car was there, which it was, but he didn't see it. So, of course, that meant I was banging the whole team. Well, he used the fact that my best friend passed away to his advantage to try to get me to have sex by saying, you're not a good girlfriend because you won't pleasure me, that you won't give me what I want. My best friend died, so you have to sleep with me. And I kept saying, no, no, I don't. And he was like, yes, yes, you do, because that's what a girlfriend does. So this argument went on for about 2 years. And finally, I just was tired of arguing. I was tired of being beaten. I was tired of all that. I was tired of him just being horrible. He was racist, and I'm Colombian. And he told me he'd rather have a child with a Caucasian girl, because then his child would have 100% Caucasian blood, and his family wouldn't disown him. Anyways, I just gave up after saying no a million times and would just let him do whatever he wanted to me. I would just lay there as if I was just a doll for him to play with me. And that really kind of took my confidence away. And a lot of more stuff happened in that time period that was just really painful, and it really stripped, like, the way I felt about myself. And it just really kind of took everything I had about me and just broke me as a person. And after that, I couldn't have any more relationships. I can't have a sexual relationship with a man. I can't get close to a man. I can't let them touch me. I suffer from PTSD, which I'm actually going through treatment for. And it's actually going really well. I actually wanted to talk to you about that a little bit. I tried many different types of PTSD throughout my life. And the one that I found that really works really well is called EMDR, which is, I'm sorry, I forget what it's called.
That's okay.
Yeah, but basically what it does, it takes what happens in the brain, like the trauma, and the brain will recognize the trauma as it happens, and it'll think it will happen over and over again, or that it's happening. So what EMDR is, it physically removes the trauma and moves it to a functional part of the brain so that we'll experience it as actually being in the past when it happens. So a couple of weeks ago, a guy, he was at a show, and he stuck his finger by my chest. And this was a major trigger for me because he was invading my space. He was touching me in a place he shouldn't be, and it triggered me really, really badly because he was touching me, and I didn't want to be touched. But through some help of a really good friend and my EMDR and just coping skills, I was able to get through it and be okay because I knew that I was safe and the PTSD treatment was helping.
Okay.
Also, that has helped with my volunteer work with the Voice for the Innocent.
Okay, Kristen, I don't want you to stay right on the line. Don't want you to go away.
Okay.
But I want to get
okay.
our guest in. Anybody want to react to Kristen's story? And also, you can ask questions or comment, or anybody want to jump in here?
Kristen, I just appreciate that you were able to share that. It sounds like there were certainly a lot of things that you've gone through, and I'm glad that you found a treatment that's helpful. That's one of the things that we offer as well. All of our services at Women Helping Women are free and confidential, and we offer therapy services to target post-traumatic stress because that tends to or can develop after people experience trauma. So I'm just sorry that you've gone through that and just glad that you're finding something that's working for you.
Kristen,
thank you.
Kristen, when you said this is the first time you've shared this story publicly, but you have shared it, have you shared it with professionals who in your treatment?
Yes, I've actually tried a couple of times in different therapy sessions to share it with various therapists, but not a lot of them have helped. I've seen women therapists, I've seen men therapists, I've seen women specialists, but in the last couple of years, I found one that really has helped me, and she has brought the EMDR to my attention, okay. And that's what really has kind of sparked everything that has brought me talking about it and actually working and volunteering with the Voice for the Innocent and helping these other survivors and hearing their stories and being able to give them support has actually been able to give me support in myself and help me gain my confidence back that I am able to open up more about what has happened.
Kendra, one of the things...
So I am very thankful to Jamie for giving me that opportunity.
Kendra, one of the things that strikes me as Kristen tells the story, her story, is how one thing tumbled into the next and tumbled into the next and got stretched out over a pretty long period of time here. How typical is that, and what's that mean when... by the time somebody is at a point where they're beginning to look for assistance, you're pretty deep into this.
I mean, it's not uncommon that we work with people who've had multiple experience of victimization. And with rates as high as what we've talked about, I guess that's not surprising. I think, too, when we look at people who perpetrate sexual violence, they're looking for typically some sort of vulnerability, which could be anything, right? So anyone can be a survivor of sexual assault or sexual violence, but that is something I think is a very predatory type of violence, unfortunately. So they do look for maybe someone who's had a history of abuse, among other things. But I would say that's not uncommon, that when people come reach out for service, it may not be the first time they've experienced an assault.
Jamie, it sounds to me like Kristen says that she's worked with a Voice for the Innocent.
Yeah.
But it sounds like she hasn't posted this particular story, her particular story, on your site.
I wouldn't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
But is this exactly this sort of saying it out loud? Is this what you're hoping for?
Yeah. I mean, I think that being able to share your story, being able to, whether it's written, whether it's saying it out loud, being able to say that, you know, that's in a lot of ways the first step, I think, whether you're speaking with someone who you're looking for support from, whether you're speaking with a counselor, whether you're looking at an online community, being able to, and it's in whatever detail you want, you know, someone could come in and give a very, very detailed recounting of what they've experienced. Or someone could come in and say, you know what, something happened to me and I'm not ready to talk about it, but here's what I'm feeling now. And they're going to get the same support regardless. But yeah, I mean, I think that storytelling is not only a powerful tool for healing, but I think that it is also an incredible first step for a lot of people who are looking to heal, looking to start that journey. I don't believe that A Voice for the Innocent is, you're not going to come there and heal and all your problems are going to be great, but you're going to find support, you're going to find compassion, and we're going to stand there with you, you know, while you're maybe looking for a counselor and while you're looking for an agency or other types of support. And I think Kristen made a very important point, maybe without intending to, but she talked about how many different counselors she saw. And I think that's so important. I hear all the time of people saying, I saw a counselor and counseling wasn't for me. And that's fair. I mean, I've had counselors in my life that I didn't think were for me either. That's totally valid. But I think also there's so many different counseling styles. There's so many different people. There's so many different philosophies, you know, that there's a counselor out there, you know, for you, if somebody needs it. So I think that, I just think that was such an important point, because it's not, you know, if you were to go to a physical doctor and say, my knee hurts, and you didn't feel like the way they treated you was the right way, you're going to go find another doctor for your knee, you know? And I think that with mental health, it's the same thing.
So perseverance.
Yeah. You know, I think so.
Yeah. Kristen, we're about out of time on this segment, but do you have any final thought that you want to share?
I just really enjoy helping these survivors. And I know that in our times right now, that with the Me Too movement, more people are speaking up about it. And I think that's great. And it's not just females, like Jamie said, more males are speaking up about it too. So I definitely think they need more attention as well. And I just think that there needs to be more attention to what's going on. And I think through all the organizations out there, I think that's really great that we're actually getting people to look around them and see that this is a real thing.
Well, I want to really thank you for calling in. This took a real trust in yourself, a real sense of bravery, and a willingness to take a risk. And I wish you all the best as you move forward to putting all the pieces of your life together in a positive and constructive way. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you, Kristen.
Stay tuned. After a break, all three guests will return. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Too often, incidents of domestic violence escalate into greater violence. In 2017, in Hamilton County alone, abusive partners ended up murdering 12 women. The Cincinnati Police and Women Helping Women have created a new program called Divert to try to minimize these incidents. From Women Helping Women, I am joined by Kendra Massey, Casey Frazee-Katz, and also joining us is the founder of A Voice for the Innocent, Jamie Service.
Service.
I'll never get that one right. Hi, Jamie.
I'm still working on it myself.
So. Yeah, I know. And to join the discussion, call 513-419-7100. You can also email us at talk@wvxu.org, or we're on Facebook and Twitter. I want to say that as that call came in, we had another call, and Bradley is on the line. And Bradley, you have a different story and a different kind of story. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you. And thank you for having this discussion. As a young boy growing up and dealing with my feelings of being gay, I was touched by an older man. And to my knowledge, he is not homosexual. So it was so conflicting that I'm struggling with my feelings of trying to deal with my sexuality and then having that imposed upon me was just, it was very difficult to overcome. I mean, it's difficult enough to come out and to recognize yourself as being gay, but then being abused by someone, it just confounds it, you know, tenfold. I'm like, wow, here I am. I'm feeling this way. And then I'm being abused by somebody, and I am feeling aroused by it because of my orientation. So, I mean, it just, honestly,
a lot of issues.
It set me back, you know, so much. It was just like, it just wasn't a normal process. And goodness gracious knows, we've all seen the stories in the media about the church and what horrible things that they covered up. But I just don't think people understand that sexual abuse, whether it be from a man on a woman or a man on a young boy or whatever, it just sets you back. And
well, let me get our guest in on this. How do you? Anybody want to take this something here?
I think the first thing that I hear, and I hear it a lot, you know, our bodies are programmed to respond to physical stimulus, you know. So I hear from a lot of people that have experienced abuse, you know, could this have been assault because it felt good, you know? And it's confusing, even if you don't factor sexuality into it. So, Bradley, first off, I'm so sorry that happened to you. And I commend you for speaking so eloquently about it and for speaking so eloquently about the issues that you've, you know, faced around it. I mean, I do not identify as homosexual, but I still, you know, I still experienced that when I was younger about like, gosh, you know, I was a teenage boy. Part of me liked looking at the stuff that I was looking at, you know, and, you know, the other things that happened or whatever. Our bodies respond to physical stimulus. And, a lot of times we hear people talk about their bodies essentially betraying them, you know? So I think that was a really, you know, important point to bring up.
Yeah. I think the other thing I think of is sometimes people confuse, that sexual violence is about sexual desire, and it's not, it's about power and control. And so someone's sexual orientation doesn't really dictate who they might perpetrate against. So people do that because they want to have power over someone. But it's typical to have that confusion, I think, after those conflicting feelings. The one other thing I want to say that we haven't said yet, our agency Women Helping Women serves all survivors, not just women.
Well, so that's just where I was going. The title is Women Helping Women.
Mm-hmm.
But you are open.
And we've tried to make that by changing our logo and our branding a little bit, but we do serve all survivors regardless of gender identity. And we aren't just women who work at the agency either. And so would encourage anyone who wants to reach out for services or to talk about what's happening to connect with Women Helping Women. Well, and I hope we'll be giving our hotline number at the end of this.
Why don't you give that? But I've got it at as 513-381-5610.
Yeah.
And that's 24 hours hotline. So 513-381-5610.
Yes, that's okay. It. And it's confidential support. So
okay. Actually, following right up on what you were saying, Leslie has called in. And Leslie, I think you have a question that will allow Kendra to advance this discussion about what Women Helping Women actually provides. Leslie?
Yes. Yes. Hi. Thanks. I had a couple questions. First, the victims that you serve of stalking and abuse, is that only intimate partner abuse or all abuse?
So we serve people who've experienced intimate partner violence, sexual assault, and stalking are our three areas
right,
of focus.
So is it stalking by intimate partners only or stalking by others?
Stalking by anybody, yeah. Anyone who's experienced stalking can reach out for support.
Okay.
Okay. Because I did reach out for support there for a stalking, and I was told that it was only for intimate partner stalking and abuse by women helping women.
I'm sorry that happened. That's not the case. So I can't explain that, but I do apologize that that happened.
And I would encourage you to try back again.
Yes, absolutely.
And maybe use the general number and call for one of our guests today, either Kendra Massey or Casey Frazee-Katz, and maybe short circuit that general number that you got.
Absolutely.
Casey, you look like you wanted to say something.
Pardon me. Just to clarify, and certainly you're welcome to ask for one of us when you call that number, and we will see what we can do to be supportive.
Okay, we are filled up with calls, so I'm just going to go to the next caller here. And I'm not great on all names, but I think it's Polina. Polina, do you have a question?
Well, I have a question and observation. I'm a rape survivor, and I also work in the field and ran groups for women incest and rape survivors. One of the observations that I made while I was doing that was that the damage to the survivor often was worse if it was just part of the culture of a family or the environment. You know, a little girl being passed around the dinner table and being felt up by the uncles, for example. Or I remember a man that I interviewed who sort of looked at me and said, oh, was what my cousin did to me sexual abuse? You know, this was a very bright man who had been in graduate school and just had not identified it, but it had an enormous impact on his life from that point on. The second point was that when the people who are, you know, that the story is told to, you know, often family members or boyfriends or whatever, don't take it seriously, this becomes a greater trauma, at least in my experience it was, than the actual assault. And I think we hear something about that, but maybe not quite enough.
Anybody want to respond?
Well, I certainly agree with that. and kind of to your point, you know, when I was abused, I was very, very educated about sex, about anatomy, about harassment, about rape. I knew all the terms. You know, my mom had discussions with me and got me books for adolescents to kind of describe these things in the appropriate way. And it wasn't until I told her and she said the word sex abuse that I recognized that's what I had experienced, you know. And I don't know if it's because, you know, it was my dad, so it wasn't a quote-unquote stranger, you know. But I definitely think that definitions are important. And you know, sometimes it's hard for people, like you said, to recognize things in their own life as such. And then as far as, your other point being, you know, not getting the support, you know, immediately from family. I mean, I think that's also huge. And like I said earlier, we see that all the time. And we've given classes about the importance of the first response because we really, really believe in that.
Agreed.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we have another caller, and I'd like to move on to Leora. Is that your name? Is that am I pronouncing it correctly?
That's correct.
Wow.
That's right.
I can get
that's
some right. name right here today. Anyway,
yeah, you did a great job.
Do you have a?
And you don't have to say my last name. Lucky you.
So. Okay. Do you have an observation? I think, or a question.
Yes. Well, I am a childhood survivor of family sexual abuse, and in my family, I've been estranged from everybody. I would be probably classified as a scapegoat in my family. When I went to the custody court to try to protect my children, they switched custody. They put a gag order on the case. I wasn't allowed to tell anybody about what happened. You know, my family, they acknowledge what happened, but they basically say, it's no big deal and I should get over it. And I've been making a big deal out of nothing. So this has been going on for about 4 decades. And you know what I was taught to do with this particular kind of evil is every time I encounter it, I try to create a tool or a product or a service, you know, that nonprofits can use to take something evil and turn it into something good. And that's how I was taught to manage this pain. And it is very painful. And, you know, one of your guests said that, you know, people in my kind of a situation are very vulnerable to other, you know, narcissistic abuse. And that's happened in, you know, both of my marriages. I was unable to protect my kids. And this was the most, you know, counterintuitive experience I could have imagined, that I would go to the courts or to law enforcement and have my hands tied to protect myself or my kids. And I very recently ended up coming back to Cincinnati after I had lived here, you know, about 20 years ago. I never expected really to be here because of leaving my second marriage. And I have a good friend here named Mindy Nemoff, who's been an editor in a digital forensics book for me and some curriculum that we have been trying to set up to be used as a fundraising opportunity to help women in my position or other women. And I would tell people, if you want to learn more about our human rights laws in the United States and our custody and child support laws and how they're not really being applied properly in this realm, I would encourage you to go to the Organization of American States, Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. There was a 2007 case submitted by a group of women and children who were not being protected. You should learn about the Ruth Gonzalez case. What's his name? I think it's Jessica Ruth Gonzalez. And about how the laws in the municipalities are applied. You can have an order of protection, and if the police don't have enough resources to send somebody and your children are murdered, you have no recourse. And that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it's why it went to the International Court. And there's also a woman named Holly Collins. There's a documentary about her called No Way Out But One. And Holly was the very first person from the United States, leaving the United States because of our laws. And she had asylum until her children turned 18 in the Netherlands.
Okay. I want to get our guest on involved in this. I think what this raises a number of things. One is recognizing that, as a number of organizations have said, this sort of treatment is the most, and I'm quoting here, most pervasive but least recognized human rights abuse in the world. This is not just an American issue. It is a worldwide issue. It is not an issue that some specific class, you know, educationally, income-wise, this affects all people at all levels of society, and oftentimes just gets overlooked or swept under the rug. So given that, what's your experience, I'm just throwing this out to any of the three of you, with working with the police and the Justice Department, the justice system, in terms of dealing with these kinds of issues?
So Women Helping Women works closely with the courts and law enforcement. And unfortunately, we do see sometimes, like Leora mentioned, sometimes there aren't legal remedies just based on what's happening or lack of evidence. These types of issues are very hard to prove. So sometimes we see people's needs aren't met through the criminal justice system. That's why we offer other types of support and safety planning. But that's why we, too, think it's really important to partner with those systems to try and help people get better responses. So that was we were on the show a few months ago to talk about a new program Women Helping Women is doing with Cincinnati Police, where we're sending advocates out on scene for domestic violence calls.
This is called the DIVERT program.
The DIVERT program, yeah, Domestic Violence Enhanced Response. And not because we don't think law enforcement are doing a good job, but they have so much to do on scene. They have so much to pay attention to. So they're thinking about safety. They're thinking about evidence collection. So having an advocate on scene allows us to be that one person who's really thinking about emotional safety. What is that survivor's need? And how can we support them on scene, but then offer follow-up support? so that if the case doesn't move forward or if their needs maybe aren't being met through that system, they have that additional support network where we can talk through, well, what else can we offer? Can we talk about other safety planning options? Can we connect with legal aid or an attorney for a divorce or custody if needed?
And that's a very vulnerable moment when the police have been called in on a domestic violence, relations, whatever case. Those are talk to any police officer. Those are the ones they fear the most, almost, because of the emotional setting. So you're sending an advocate out at that very moment to be on site. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Yes.
So this has been in operation now for a few months.
Since mid-February.
Since February. How's it operating?
It's operating well. So it was a little bit of a slow start. So there was training and communication with law enforcement to know to call us out and to know when to call us out. But since mid-February, as of Friday, we had responded to 75 calls. Every district in Cincinnati is utilizing the program. What we're seeing, and every call is different. So sometimes there's an arrest made, sometimes there's not because the person fled or they don't have probable cause to make an arrest. But what the advocate's able to do is either, if needed, get someone into shelter or sometimes get a hotel voucher. We've helped people with a plane ticket or a bus ticket to go out of state if they felt like they needed to for their safety, or just following up to meet them at arraignment court the next morning to offer support there. So I think what we've noticed is being able to be on scene and meet that person in that moment and provide that support in that really moment of crisis, then we're able to offer more follow-up support, which I think is really what's helpful, versus if we were calling the next day or if they were just given our hotline number, I don't think nearly the amount of survivors would actually reach out for that support.
You know, one of the things that strikes me is that a lot of people who have been abused are, especially in a domestic relationship situation, they're very conflicted about what they want to have happen, because even though there might have even been violence, they may be in love with or think they're in love with the other person. This is a very difficult moment or moments. Am I correct on this?
I think so. And I think that connects to what a couple of the callers said too, of the aspect of a relationship. So whether that's someone who's a child and who was sexually abused by someone who was a family member, or if that's someone who's an adult in a relationship that's violent, the relationship complicates it in so many ways. And there are many ways, especially as Kendra has said, with people who perpetrate crimes like this, it's about power and control. And so we see that people who are perpetrators of these crimes will try to make it so it's easier for them to have the most control in different areas, whether it's with children or finances.
Lots of issues. I want to thank all three of my guests today. These are not easy topics to talk about, but these are the people who know how to talk about them. And that's Kendra Massey and Casey Frazee-Katz from Women Helping Women, and Jamie Cyrus.
Yeah.
So close. Who would have thought that you're the person I know?
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.